This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On November 6, 2007, voters in the Scottsville Magisterial District will go to the polls to elect their representative on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. This recording is Sean Tubbs' September 7th interview with Denny King, an independent candidate campaigning for the seat. Mr. King has two opponents, independent Kevin Fletcher and Democrat Lindsay Dorrier.
Denny King, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and written transcript for this interview will be available on the internet. Information from this interview will be used in a compilation of Charlottesville Tomorrow's nonpartisan voter guide. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on land use, on issues related to land use, transportation, and community design. As you are aware, some of the questions you will be asked have been provided in advance, others have not. All supervisor candidates will be asked the same questions. Are you ready to start?
I am.
Question one. Please describe your past political experience and what qualifies you to be on the Board of Supervisors.
Well, let's begin with my corporate professional business career. For the last 37 years, I have been involved in the corporate world and primarily the corporate entertainment world. Those 37 years consisted of putting out fires every day and addressing major problems. And figuring out how to fix those problems. And for 37 years, I've been very, very successful in that business arena. As many of my friends and neighbors know, I left the corporate world some 10 years ago and got into more local activity with respect to television production and consultation work for other companies. I moved here by choice some 16 years ago from Los Angeles, where I spent those 37 years in the corporate world swimming with the sharks. And you learn a great deal. You learn how to survive in the corporate world, and you learn how to deal with the pressures and the idiosyncrasies that you find daily in the business world. And I look at my county as a business. Our county is a $350 million business, and it must be run accordingly as a business. And I believe that I certainly have the background to fill those responsibilities. During those 37 years, I must say that a great deal of my time was devoted to volunteerism. I have volunteered basically all my life. I have sat on state commissions, on corporate councils, on corporate boards, on nonprofit boards and commissions. And I have learned how to be of service. And I believe that everyone, sometime in their life, should think very seriously about public service. The first half of my journey has been a wonderfully, incredibly blessed journey. And so I've looked now at the back half of my life, and I want to dedicate that to serving others, to serving those who have difficulty serving themselves. And I feel that I have the requirements, I have the ability, and I certainly have the energy to become the voice of the people.
Question number two. In June of 2006, the city and county signed off on a 50-year water supply plan that includes a new dam at the Ragged Mountain Reservoir and a new pipeline connecting it to the South Fork Rivanna Reservoir. Do you support this plan? Why or why not?
Well, as you know, water is my number one quality of life issue. I support planning for the future adequacy of our water supply, both public and private, in our groundwater. I also support connecting the land use planning to water and sewer planning. We live in a very unique market here, and with respect to two entities that control water and sewer, it's very, very. I find that very interesting. I do not support, however, the community 50-year water supply as it's written, because it's flawed. I believe that there are some tremendous flaws in there, and some of the critical underlying assumptions are missing. They're either missing, or they're flawed, or they're highly questionable. And I think that for me to support that, I need more information, and I need more defined information. The 50-year plan was created without the benefit of any master plan. Especially for the designated growth areas, the very areas where the public water is going to be used. How can we plan if we don't have an idea of what we're going to build or where it's going to be built? We just can't simply plan that unless we know exactly where these areas are going to be built. Only the Crozet Master Plan had been completed at the time of the study. Irony is that Crozet was admitted from the study because of an estimated build-out population of 12,000, and the current water supply for that area was deemed adequate. However, there's a caveat here. There's a bit of a caveat here. Another question mark. I'll get back to that 12,000. That current water supply was based on those 12,000. The consultant was given 12,000 as the population number for Crozet. And we found that that really wasn't the actual number. Not the 24,000 the county has tried to insist was intended as the ultimate build-out population for Crozet. At 24,000, Crozet's water supply obviously isn't adequate. It isn't adequate. Another question mark is Biscuit Run and how it was factored into the 50-year plan. We didn't even know about Biscuit Run when we created the 50-year plan. Crozet and Biscuit Run make me very uncomfortable. That's why I really can't support the 50-year plan as it's currently written. I worry about those underlying assumptions that haven't been clearly defined yet. And what about the impact of the university's current $3 billion capital campaign? The UVA hospital extension, the South Grounds building over there, and I traveled through JPJ this morning, Jefferson Parkway, and traffic was backed up, and the construction and the size of that expansion is enormous. What will that impact be? You know, I don't believe that either one of those have been included in the 50-year plan. And if they're not included, how many more are not inclusive in the 50-year plan? The next consideration is how we're going to pay for all of these improvements. And that's a big if. How are we going to pay for all this, these improvements and all of this expansion of water supply? The cost of the planned water supply expansion and the improvements, they'll not be borne by the very people who benefit the most from the expansion of these water supplies. The developers, the burden will be placed on new and existing residents. And that's an awful lot to ask of these people. I realize, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, I had a wonderful briefing with Mr. Gary Fern, who heads the Albemarle County Service Authority, and he outlined clearly to me the five-fold increase in storage capacity. Building a dam 40 feet higher than the existing dam now that sits on the Rivanna a little bit further downstream. And we now have a water capacity, I believe, of about 395 million gallons with the existing dam in Ragged Mountain. With the creation of this new dam, it will be some 40 feet taller, built further downstream, and it will increase our capacity by fivefold, increasing it from roughly 390 million gallons to 2,200,000,000 gallons. That sounds great. But if the good Lord from above doesn't provide us with some pretty frequent precipitation, and if we don't have snow melt off from the mountains and hard freezes, we can dig the deepest hole ever created by modern man. And if we don't fill it with water, we're still going to be in that crunch.
Moving on to question three. In addition to community concerns about an adequate water supply to accommodate growth and prepare for droughts, recent commercial and residential developments in Albemarle County have had to address inadequate sewer infrastructure. In general, what will the financial impact be on ratepayers for public water and sewer to complete the 50-year water supply plan and update and expand our aging sewer facilities?
Here we go again. Sean, case in point. Albemarle Place and the inadequate sewer infrastructure for that development exemplifies this disconnect between the Board of Supervisors and the ACSA. How did it get approved? There was a total disconnect there. And as for the financial impact on a ratepayer and taxpayers, on our water ratepayers and our taxpayers, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge unless the county changes the way it does business. The ACSA board member, Dr. Liz Palmer, in her short time on the board, has pointed out several changes that needed to be made. She, I believe, understands fully the enormity and the dynamics of this particular situation. She has been a strong advocate for more contact between the staff of the ACSA and the Board of Supervisors to tear down this wall that's been built over years and years and years and years. Our world has changed. Albemarle County has changed. It's changed drastically, and it's continuing to change on a daily basis. We need fresh new ideas. I believe in term limits. I believe that after one or two terms on the Board of Supervisors, it's time, as our Senator Warner said in the rotunda last week, as Mr. Jefferson said, it's time to pass the torch on to someone else. There's a wall that's been created there, and I think for anything to be successful, and I bring this to the table from the business world, oftentimes I would have 200 or more employees, and I find that one of the biggest problems in the corporate world, in industry or in business, no matter how large or small, is one word: communications. And that's a very strong word that we all clearly use too infrequently.
Moving on to question four. In 2005, the Board of Supervisors unanimously approved an update to the rural areas portion of the comprehensive plan. That revised plan calls for the county to aggressively pursue phasing of development in the rural areas, also known as time-based zoning. If elected, would you support a phasing policy? Why or why not?
Well, first of all, protecting the rural area from development is an extremely complex issue. It's extremely complex. Decisions that have been made years and years ago have set this county on a very difficult journey to try to balance the needs and wants of 90% of the county remaining rural and the other 5% of the county for higher density. If the county's 5% growth area strategy doesn't succeed, the rural area will undoubtedly be in trouble. You know, I guess the real question is, what price rural area protection? And with everything, there will be a price to pay somewhere down the road. So that's why we must have a greater vision, a much more long-term vision. We really have to start making these decisions after extremely careful thought. If we don't, we're going to pay the consequences sooner or later.
Specifically on phasing, how do you have a position on that issue?
I really don't at this point. I see benefits to phasing, and I see problems with phasing. With every issue, there's a positive, and with most anything, there's a negative. I think phasing will work if it serves the community as a whole well. And I think that that's what we have to start looking at. The decisions that we make today, whether it's phasing, whether it's downzoning, whatever, has to have a benefit for everyone, not just those who have more land than someone else. Many people, and especially in my magisterial district of Scottsville, it's a very unique magisterial district because you have tremendous pockets of wealth. At the same time, you have people living at or below the poverty level. You have tremendous areas of disenfranchised families where you have Leave It to Beaver families on the other side of that coin. I believe with any issue that comes before the board's first primary responsibility is to hear the will of the people, all of the people.
Question 5, what is your specific strategy for protecting Albemarle's farms, fields, and forests, our rural countryside? And what are your greatest concerns about new development in the rural countryside?
Well, as I just said, what price rural area protection? There's going to be a price to pay for that. Who's going to pay for this protection? I think we have to get all the parties to the table. We have to figure out who is willing to pay for what. And what they're willing to pay. How much are they willing to pay? What sacrifices are they willing to make? With everything, there are sacrifices that someone will have to make. That conversation needs to be had before any protection plan can ever be devised. And it has to be devised with the input of those inputting their feelings and their thoughts and their plans and their fears and their concerns. What if the rural area wanted to be protected, but they're not willing to pay for that protection? They can't have their cake and they can't eat it too. I mean, once again, it has to benefit the whole. It has to benefit everyone. I don't know that the county has ever dealt with a thought like that. So to answer that question, I would have to reserve my judgment until all the sides have been allowed to weigh in and we listen to the comments of the people on all sides.
Moving on to question 6, how do you feel about an expansion of the county's designated growth areas, currently 5% of the county's land area, to support a transfer of development rights program or to support a developer's request to move land from the rural area to the growth area?
You know, the more I look at the 95-5% split, the more I become convinced that such an imbalance, such an enormous imbalance of 95% and 5%, how could it ever be sustainable? I can't get that right in my mind. And when the equilibrium is reestablished, there'll be consequences that no one will like. And that simply seems inevitable to me. 95% rural and only 5% growth. Yet, as I arrived here today, as you know, Sean, I drove around nearly 30 minutes in heavy traffic. With limited parking, are we rapidly becoming Northern Virginia? We can see it every day. We feel it as we go about our tasks of going to work, taking our children to the parks, going to the grocery store. We see it every single day. Transferring more development to the 5% or expanding the growth areas, I don't think does much to address the basic imbalance. That's simply a Band-Aid. it's not solving the much larger problem. And as for entertaining developers' request to move land from the rural areas to the growth areas, I think land use planning and comprehensive planning should always transcend that specific individual financial goals. I mean, we have to look at it again and again and again and again, I say. It has to benefit all the people to the best of our ability. Now, we simply can't go in there with a magic wand and make 100% of the residents of Albemarle County happy with everything. There is a positive and there is a negative. Living in a balanced community simply depends on eliminating favoritism. We have to eliminate this favoritism. And the current members of the board apparently don't understand. They don't understand that concept. I believe, as I sit here today, I believe that they have served. That's poor stewardship. When one people are served greater, their needs are served greater than the other people's needs are served. That's favoritism, and that's poor stewardship. We have a responsibility to everybody.
Question 7. How would you define quality growth for our community?
My primary quality of life issue, which encompasses growth, is built around public water and groundwater supplies. We have to use them in a sustainable manner. Our transportation system was brought home to me very clearly again in this last hour as I looked for a parking space and tried to navigate the roads throughout Charlottesville, is terribly inadequate. Our growth areas have the infrastructure, the services, and amenities they need. But, you know, the regular people can't afford to live there. We can have all the wonderful amenities that could ever be provided in a neighborhood, but how can we make these neighborhoods affordable to the working class? And that frightens me terribly. I don't want to see Albemarle County become a county of and for the rich. It shouldn't be. Especially in the Scottsville Magisterial District, where I've met with thousands of citizens, and many of whom have sat down at the kitchen table with me and said, "Mr. King, look at our tax bill. Look at our house assessment." They're frightened. They're terribly frightened. And they see across the road someone who came in and bought 2,000 acres and put up 11 miles of board fencing and painted it white and doesn't even maintain a residency here. That's wrong. It's simply wrong.
Moving on to question 8. What are your transportation priorities for the Route 29 corridor north of Charlottesville, and how specifically will the community fund those initiatives?
Several weeks ago, I spent an afternoon riding through my district with VDOT executives. And I wanted them to share with me those plans that existed in the 7-year plan. What's going to happen to 250? I have made it a point to get up early and go to Glenmore and sit there during rush hour. And when I moved here 16 years ago, I never heard people referring to Charlottesville or Albemarle County as having rush hour. I would commonly hear them referring to rush minutes. Now we truly have rush hours because I sat in Glenmore and I made that left turn heading westbound into the city. And from the exit of Glenmore to Free Bridge, the shortest time it took me was 39 minutes. And that's less than 2 miles. No, I'm sorry, that's 2.7 miles. I know that we don't have money for roads. We simply don't have money for roads. And I was told that by some of the management people at VDOT. So we have to look at this making little incremental improvements to our road systems. We have to encourage carpooling. How do we encourage carpooling? Do we have inviting carpooling stations at all the entry corridors into our city? I don't think so, because I've traveled all of them. Do we have a dependable transit system? If I live in the Esmont Keene area, and if there was a form of public transportation that I could count on that arrived every 90 minutes even, scheduled every 90 minutes, and I knew that that vehicle was there and dependable, I wouldn't drive 22 miles each way back and forth to work daily. I would happily get on that bus. Nice air-conditioned bus, ecologically friendly, and maybe even Wi-Fi'd, that many people could sit there and start their day's work while they're commuting to and from work. I think that those are the areas that we really have to look at. We have to encourage people. Maybe we start doing different time periods where people can come into their place of work. The whole world does not have to revolve around 9 to 5. And since we live in a totally different time now, that internet, the computer has had such a tremendous impact on our lives. How many of us could really accomplish everything we need to do never leaving our home office? And once a week or twice a week, we could go into our office and we would have the necessary communication and the necessary interaction with our coworkers that would be required. I just recently heard that some of the major corporations, IBM, Procter & Gamble, and others, Fortune 500 companies, are really beginning to encourage people to work at home. So much so that when the senior executives need their flashy corner office, their cherry paneled corner offices, they call and book it. They make an appointment to use it. They make an appointment to use the conference room. Just think how many cars we would take off the road. And not only just cars. Look at the impact we would have on energy. Look at the fuel savings. Look at the electricity that's being used in offices throughout the day in our nation. And we are in an energy crunch. We are in a water crunch. But the only time this ever comes to the surface is when we have the threat of an emergency. Then we say, gee, we have to start conserving. We have to start conserving. Don't wash your car. Don't water your tomato plants. We simply don't have the water. We can't wait any longer until we get into emergency situations. We have to address. We have to be proactive, not reactive.
Sorry, I hate to ask a follow-up on that, but anything specific about the 29 corridor north of Charlottesville,
I'm thrilled that at least the dialogue has begun about extending Berkmar, building the bridge. I think that would certainly alleviate some of the congestion on 29. But then I have to look back and say, well, the Meadow Creek Parkway was a fabulous idea in its time as well. God forbid that extending Berkmar Drive and the building of the bridge will take the amount of time that the Meadow Creek Parkway is taking. So I don't have the magic wand. I don't have the magic wand. And I think I have to go back to what I said earlier. We have to alleviate some of the traffic, and we have to do it in non-conventional ways, non-traditional ways. I mean, we are a very unique city here. We are the home of one of the world's greatest universities. And for the life of me, I could never understand why we have never utilized some of the great knowledge and some of the great minds that exist on the grounds of the great University of Virginia. From McIntyre School to Darden to engineering to transportation, these are some of the greatest minds in our nation. We should utilize that. We understand that the University of Virginia is the engine that drives this train, but we don't take advantage of it.
What are your views on working more closely with the city and the University of Virginia to jointly operate a regional transit system? What will you do to promote use of public transportation, pedestrian trails, and bicycle paths?
I will stand out in the middle of the busiest intersection in Albemarle County with sandwich boards on my back promoting public transportation. That's a great question, Sean, and I'm not trying to be funny. But I believe in this trilogy. I believe in the University of Virginia and the city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle. They're great minds here. They're great ideas. But to listen, to bring all of these great minds to the table, I don't have a doubt that if we get together and we all read off the same page, we can make an impact. We can have a world-class transportation system in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. I don't have a doubt in my mind.
Question 10. How do we ensure the community infrastructure, roads, sidewalks, fire rescue facilities, libraries, and so on, is in place to support new development in our designated growth areas? Will the county's new cash profit expectations adequately address the community's needs? And will you support bond referendums to pay for capital budget priorities?
Well, how the Board of Supervisors approves thousands and thousands of housing units in all the commercial development, without a proper policy in place, is totally beyond me. I've never understood it. In Virginia, we have no impact fees here, and proffers for rezoning are only ways to make developer attempt to pay their developers pay their fair share. I don't think that's happened effectively enough here in Albemarle County. And the board's reluctance, and there is a tremendous reluctance on the part of the board to require infrastructure to be in place before any development occurs. And, you know, I've always wondered, what should drive development? What should come first, the chicken or the egg? What did come first, the chicken or the egg? Infrastructure and natural resources have to be the engine that drives that growth train. Why they have the reluctance to place those proffers, to demand those proffers, I simply don't understand. When I'm elected to the Board of Supervisors, I will address that issue, and I will address that issue more aggressively. The growth area will not be the places they need to be because of poor stewardship on the part of certain board members.
And on the issue of bond referendums?
I think that that's a question that simply has to be proposed to the people. Once again, we have so many people living at or below the poverty level, just trying to make ends meet. The bond issue, I would like to study further because I think it requires great study, great consideration, and we really have to be sure that's the direction that we wish to take.
Question number 11. In the last county budget, significant attention was paid by the Board of Supervisors to finding new sources of revenue and to lowering the real estate property tax rate. Some proposed new initiatives were scaled back or eliminated. No reductions were made to existing local government operational expenses for fiscal year 2008. What improvements would you make to our budget process, our allocation of tax dollars, and the funding of new strategic initiatives?
I think the board worked diligently on the creation of the budget, and I followed the public hearings very, very closely. You can't please all of the people all the time. You have various departments in various entities of county government who are always asking, we need more money, we need more money, we need more police cars, we need more teachers. We have to build onto our schools, we have to do everything. I think we simply have to look at our needs, and as we manage our budgets in our homes, we have to approach how we're spending our money. Are we spending our money in the wisest possible direction? And I think it's all about running the county as a business. It also is a home. I think that we all have a certain monthly cost, annual cost, and we sit down with our budget and we make it happen. We simply make it happen. And hopefully we're successful at that. I would like to open the dialogue again, and I think that this dialogue happens every 15 or 20 years. And that is simply, what services, city and county, could be combined? And if so, how much money would be saved? Could we combine city and county schools? Could we attract better teachers? Could we attract more qualified administrators? Could we afford to pay them competitive salaries? Should we look at our multiple policing agencies? City, county, county sheriff, city sheriff, University of Virginia Police Departments. We are one. We are one. I believe that it's certainly worthy of exploration. It's worthy. Another area that I feel has been neglected or not looked at carefully enough, and those are the agricultural, forestry, horticulture, tax credits on farms. As I mentioned earlier, we have an abundance of faux farms in our county. I've never seen a cow on many of those farms. I've never seen soybeans or corn growing. But yet I understand that these farms are getting tremendous favoritism in taxes by claiming agricultural use. There's nothing wrong with that. And goodness knows I support the family farmer. And that family farmer should receive these benefits, should receive these agricultural tax benefits. But if somebody comes in and buys 500 acres or 100 acres or 30 acres, and they're going after agricultural tax credits, and there is nothing there but fields looking like a golf course, that's wrong. And I think that that has to be policed a little bit more effectively. And I think that we have been negligent in handing these out too quickly without really understanding fully, is that person worthy to receive that tax credit? I think that there are millions of dollars, millions of tax dollars out there that simply aren't being collected, that could be collected. And I think that we could raise substantially the county's revenue by policing some of these issues that simply fall into the cracks.
Okay. Moving on to question 12, which is the first of the additional questions. What is your top priority for action by the Board of Supervisors if you are elected?
I'll reiterate once again. They are three: water, transportation, and growth. Water is my biggest issue. Water and sewer. These are not renewable resources. And I had a voter when I went door to door the other night say, Mr. King, you know, do you think we'll ever come to the point where we have to flush our commode with Avion? And I said, gracious, I would certainly hope not. But, you know, we may if we continue at the pace that we've been going.
Question 13. The Board of Supervisors is currently reviewing the proposed Biscuit Run development. At 3,100 homes, this would be the largest single development in the county's history. Do you believe Biscuit Run will be quality growth in our community? Why or why not?
I attended the Mill Creek South Homeowners Association meeting this past Thursday night. And I know this will be podcast later, so I forget what was the date last Thursday night. Anyway, that will be a neighborhood that certainly will be impacted by the development of Biscuit Run. They had tremendous concerns about connectivity. I know, once again, and I have to reiterate, there are pros and there are cons to everything. Certainly there are pros to connectivity. And there are some pretty bad negatives, too. Mill Creek South has no curbing. It has no sidewalks. The Homeowners Association members expressed their intense concern about how quickly a roadway would be built, that connector road would be built. And I have a very strong feeling that for the next 30 years, that connector road would be used as a shortcut to get to Avon and I-64. It would be nothing but continual streams of dump trucks and heavy equipment, dust, gravel. There are small children who play. Mill Creek South is a neighborhood made up of families. They have school-age children. They have kindergarten-age children. They're terribly concerned. They're not concerned about the completion of Biscuit Run because I believe that everybody thinks that it will certainly be a nice addition. We have to be concerned again and again and again and again about the infrastructure, the water, the runoff. They were concerned about runoff. There are some critical slopes that abut Biscuit Run and Mill Creek South. There are certain areas, and I believe they pointed out three areas of Mill Creek South, that without proper planning and without proper land preparation, they could, in fact, endure some severe runoff problems. But I think what I heard from them, in addition to the runoff problems, in addition to the traffic, they were most concerned about when that connector road would be built. Would it be built when they had completed 1,000 homes? Would it be built before they ever built home number one? And that's their concern, and I think they have a very, very valid concern.
Question 14. In your opinion, is the state government adequately funding our transportation needs? And if not, what steps will you take to ensure priority transportation projects are actually funded and completed in a reasonable time frame?
I would like to see a stronger relationship between county government and state government. I feel that great improvement can be made there. I think we can become much more aggressive, much more interactive with our state government. I think that county government has had some shortcomings in that area. And I believe that we have to have an ongoing dialogue. You know, he who begs and he who cries loudest normally wins. And I think that we have to go there. We have to sit down with our state legislators, our delegates, our senators, and we have to make our people's voices also known to them as they have been known to us. because they also are elected officials. But I think we have to create a much stronger and a more consistent relationship with state government than what I've experienced we've had.
Question number 15. What improvements, if any, do you think should be considered by the Board of Supervisors to create genuine public participation in growth and development decisions?
I believe strongly in public hearings. And I believe without people, government simply doesn't work. People make government work. The Board of Supervisors don't make government work or not work. The people make government work. And without input from the people, in the form of public hearings, I think that government will always be at a standstill. I'm impressed with what the city of Charlottesville does with respect to televising each and every meeting that they have. And I would love to see the county start televising each and every meeting. There are families that can't get away for a 7 o'clock meeting at Lane Auditorium, but they would love to get up the next morning or the next day or the next evening and sit down on their computer and see how the meeting went. I think Charlottesville Today has done a remarkable job in podcasting the audio. And I think that they have very successful in capturing still images and in some cases video images of certain meetings. But I think the county should make that investment in a fixed videotape operation and have it manned every single meeting. If the city of Charlottesville can do this, gracious sakes, why can't the county of Albemarle do this? Come on, let's join the 21st century.
Question number 16. What lessons has the county learned from the Crozet Master Plan, and what challenges does the county face with the Pantops and Places 29 Master Plans, and how will you address those challenges if elected?
Water, 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 traffic. Traffic, traffic, traffic. There is no magic pill. There is not a magic fix. We all have to sit down and be on the right page, and the people have to be involved in these decisions. And my observations have been that the people's voices haven't been heard. And I've listened. And you know, I've attended virtually every meeting that the county has over the past year. And I watch as the residents go to the podium and they speak their heartfelt words. Many, many nights have I watched tears appear in the eyes of some of our residents, so concerned and so frightened. And the response has been, thank you, we'll take that under advisement. As I travel around my district, the very saddest thing I hear, Danny, what's the point? And they throw up their arms. What's the point? We have to give the county back to the people. The people feel that their voices aren't being heard and their county has been taken away from them. We have people lived here for multiple generations. They're good people. They're hardworking people. They're church-going people. We have rapidly, and we continue to turn this county into something that it should not be. And I want to bring it back to the people.
Can you address specifically what challenges the county faces specifically with the Pantops and Places 29 Master Plans?
Once again, I just simply have to go back to, will the infrastructure be in place to meet the tremendous needs that Places 29 and Pantops will require? We have to make sure that we're not playing catch-up. Let's build that infrastructure first, and then let's address that. But I don't want to sit here as a county and continually play catch up to meet that growth, to meet the demands that Places 29 and Pantops will bring about. I had something very interesting the other night at the Homeowners Association meeting I attended. Some years ago, there was a developer here in town whom I know who wanted to place a big box store on the south side of our county, on the south side of Charlottesville. And it was voted down. And several of the homeowners said, "Mr. King, we've always wanted a big box store, a Home Depot or a Target or something out here. But every time we have to go all the way out 29, I think we have to think a little bit more outside the box as to where we're placing all of this infrastructure. Why in the world are we placing it in one area and forcing people from the south side or the east side to travel all the way out there?" And people say, "Oh, I just hate to go to Lowe's, or I hate to go to Walmart, or I hate to go to Target. To go out there and shop. It's such a hassle, that 29 corridor."
And I believe we're on the final question now, question 17. What do you see as the primary responsibilities of the Board of Supervisors?
Clearly, in six words. Clearly, the voice of the people. That's our responsibility. To listen to the voice of the people, and to do everything we can possibly do to meet the needs of the will of the people.
Mr. King, thank you very much for participating in our interview.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.